Hang in there. Dude, it is.
That's Smiley Kaufman for 61. Wow.
I'm Smiley Kaufman, and this is The Smiley Show.
All right. We did it.
Mics are hot.
Mics are hot.
Mics are hot.
I think that's about as good of a intro as I'm going to be able to do. I really wish I could get the music fade to a better spot. Maybe I should trim the intro. But, I mean, here we are.
That was clean. That was really clean.
I think that might have been the cleanest one we've done. How about that?
Yeah, not bad. Not bad. Happy to be back in the stream. Happy for your Eagles. Really disappointed. Do you not own any Eagles gear? What's going on here?
I do. I mean, so I'm wearing my, you know, forest or midnight green Cypress Point hat here. So that's kind of sort of supposed to be a nod to the Eagles. I'm wearing my Bill Belichick cutoff hoodie with the North Carolina football on it because, it's football, it's Super Bowl theme. So I had to reemphasize that point. But I wore my Eagles gear last night, as did my son. My whole family was decked out in Eagles gear. Had a delightful evening, low stress. Had to put him to bed at halftime, but the game was already over. It's about as good as it gets.
I mean, that was a blowout. Just an absolute, just blowout. And I can't tell you how big of a Cooper DeJean,
I think we're going with.
I mean,
hey, guess where he's from?
Iowa, right?
Went to Iowa from South Dakota. Shout out to our boy Jackson Brown. I mean, Jackson Brown's not from South Dakota, dude, but we played college ball there.
His basketball highlights go hard, too. I mean, just dunking on dudes.
You know who else is from? Dallas Goddard as well. I think he went to school in either North Dakota or South Dakota, but those Dakota boys, they make them a little bit different up there. It's just freakish athletes.
Yeah, just good to see.
Chiefs couldn't do a dang thing. It was confusing.
What did you think of Kendrick Lamar?
I didn't watch much of the halftime show. I was putting my son to bed at that point. Mm. That was like it was a tale of two halves in the Hume household. So let me just paint the picture for you. And actually, we weren't even here. We were at our neighbors, the Snyders, and they have three little kids. They have a little newborn baby about the same age as Kadick, and then they also have a son, Hudson. And Hudson and Walker are both aligned in that they are both agents of chaos. Like they Walk had his Jalen Hurts jersey on. Hudson had a little Eagles shirt on, and they were just running throughout the household, just yelling at the top of their lungs, pushing little cars around, just having the time of their lives. So the first half was uplifting family vibes, everyone enjoying kind of, watching the game together. And then we just drove around the corner. I put the kids to bed, and then I came back, and then Nick and I proceeded to take it deep and just prop bet anything we could get action on the entire second half. Not much. I will say we got a little ahead of
Gatorade. What color was the Gatorade?
Yellow. Yellow. Yeah.
Where was that on the odds board?
I didn't play the Gatorade. I should have played the Gatorade. I was just kind of doing standard. We were just trying to kind of go with the game flow. We hit a big one where we had AJ Brown next touchdown scorer, that last touchdown of the first half. And then we were really kind of like confidence crested. Like, all right, let's just let it ride in the second half. I'm coming back over, no kids. And then from there, it just was all downhill. Just a lot of just irresponsible little prop. Nothing, no big money, but just we thought we were gonna take down the casino.
Yeah.
Take down the books, and shocker.
You hit one prop, and next thing you know, you're parlaying props.
Yes. Yeah. He had next touchdown score on the Chiefs, a guy that I'm pretty sure they just made up his name so that if you bet this guy to score a touchdown, they would just call like the gambling hotline and be like, hey, this guy needs help. Yeah. There's something wrong with him, and we need to send someone to help him out.
Coin flip? Did you bet on that?
Did not bet on coin flip. And I'm now looking at the chat, and Jackson's saying it's Cooper DeJean.
So yeah, right. I don't know. Yeah. It didn't feel right when I said it.
Yeah.
But the other reason people watch the halftime show is that there's like prop bets for the halftime show.
Yes. What do you think of the halftime show?
Songs played.
You have any thoughts?
Here's the thing. I was on a Southwest flight on the way home, and we were hitting the Dougie on the plane. Like when Mustang hit, like everybody was up, just like hands up. I mean, if it would have been a Spirit flight, we would have gone down. But Southwest, we were absolutely bumping.
Oh, that's good. I really love that for you. Yeah, I would have loved to seen you and the rest of the clientele on a Spirit flight just vibing out to the Kendrick Lamar halftime show.
Dude,
might have been a sight to see.
I loved it. Now, I may have been in the minority here, but I was vibing.
Yeah, I mean, I think there are mixed opinions on it. I'm not young enough anymore, Smiley. I'm not part of the culture anymore. I think the kids, they tell you what's cool, what's not. Mm-hmm. Obviously, I'm aware of the whole Kendrick and Drake beef, but the Good Kid, Mad City, Kendrick's first album.
Yeah,
I still think it's maybe top five albums of all time. Just a cinematic masterpiece. Yes. But I really have not listened to much Kendrick in the years since, so it's tough for me to comment.
I mean, I kept looking over to, like, the person, like, in the aisle next to me. We're just like, sick, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, sick. Because it's a Southwest flight, and everybody's got the, you know, that's the one really cool thing about Southwest is, like, the free live TV, and it's, like, really easy to cruise.
I didn't know Southwest was doing that now. I thought that was just a JetBlue thing.
No,
I'm a Southwest guy. That's kind of on me.
Southwest has always had the TV.
Really?
Yeah, that's been a thing for a decade.
Wow. Maybe I've just been too preoccupied. I like Southwest because you can just go to the back of the plane with your kids and, you know, like, just please no one bother me. I really don't. I'm not trying to bother
you. Well, it's more, much more of a, on a Southwest flight, you're expecting a little bit of chaos. So when you show up with your kid on the plane, it's like, hey, glad you guys all showed up to our party. You know, like, this is.
I love it.
That's the vibes.
That's the vibes. Well, I don't know if there's much to talk about in the game other than, you know, it was a romp, and I don't know that I feel like America wanted to see the Chiefs lose, but I think they also probably wanted a close game, and they did not get that. So
no, they didn't. Did you listen to Tom Brady much?
Didn't really. I mean, it was classic, like, Super Bowl party type situation where the volume's on, but it's kind of like faint. You know, there's a lot going on. So I
listened to it mainly just because I'm on a flight. It's all I can listen to. And I can't chat with anybody besides my buddy next to me for the. Oh yeah,
it was
like $600,000 apparently.
That's a lot. That's it's a big watch, big fancy watch, and it's worth a lot of money and hard to miss.
Oh, I'm curious what the chat thinks of how Tom Brady did.
Yeah, I mean,
I can't see the chat. So
the chat is. I think if you go to your sidebar, you should be able to click chat. I don't know what interface you see. No one's.
Oh no, I got it.
You got it there. Yeah, so you can kind of see some of that. Yeah, I think that. I don't know. You saw, I think, a couple weeks back where Greg Olson was just talking about his demotion from that top role, and he felt like he'd done a really good job, and it's kind of hard to stomach now that Brady's in that role. But I also feel like, I mean, and this maybe kind of semi segues us into the golf, but. If Tom Brady is available as an analyst, Greg Olson, you were amazing. You did a great job, but, like, he's Tom Brady. You're going to put him in the booth. He's going to be a number one guy. He's going to be a draw. And,
I think Greg's better, though.
I don't disagree with that. But this is unfortunately not necessarily a merit-based job as much as it is, like, a
pretty
who gets
job.
Butts in seats. And it's a different thing because I wouldn't say that Jordan Spieth Jordan Spieth has the merits, but it's the same thing with, like, sponsor exemptions of people getting upset with Jordan Spieth for getting sponsored. Like, Jordan Spieth puts butts in seats.
Yeah.
And he's also a three-time major winner.
I'll say that the hardest thing for broadcasts and TV announcers is blowouts, because you're just having to fill time with your words versus just talking about what's in front of you in the play. So, I honestly, like, all things considered, I thought he did a really nice job. Like, way better from, like, the beginning of the year. He's, like, shown some really nice growth. I thought at times, like, we got a little too chatty at the end, like, trying to find something. But you know what? It was overall for a Super Bowl, I thought I was entertained listening to him.
Yeah, we got a couple comments here that I'm throwing up on the screens. Kyle Riegler said TB got off the hook because the game was bad. Marcus Rainwater here says Brady did pretty good, still getting better, but you have to put Greg in there.
Like,
Sam,
do you think Greg, like, can he get a number one job? Do you think?
Okay, so what are his options? Like, I mean, because basically
Collingsworth is, like, the guy who's been probably around the longest. You know, like, he would probably be the next one to be out.
Probably.
You would think, but. Who knows how long he's locked in with Fox? You don't.
Romo's not going anywhere with CBS.
No. But what's going to continue to happen, though? There's going to be Netflix, YouTube TV,
yes,
all these other Amazon, all these other, like, different players. Now they're going to be coming into NFL.
Yeah, we got Jackson was just blown away by Brady's jawline and pearly veneers. So,
jeez, Jackson, bonk.
Yeah, bonk you. We're bonking you through the screen. Yeah, I mean, if you look at it that way, it's the four seeds right now are Brady, Romo, Collinsworth, Aikman, correct? And then, so you just kind of almost have to wait for a new rights holder to create a seat for Greg Olsen. But, yeah, so that's kind of, I guess that's all I have on the Super Bowl. If you want to kind of get over to some Waste Management Open,
yeah,
there's much more else. Let's get into the golf. And it was Thomas Dietrich who got it done. I'm sorry, Smiley. One quick one I got to get in the notes here before we get started, because it's the first time we've been on air since the passing of Tiger Woods' mother, Coltita Woods. Send her deepest condolences. Obviously, she's been there with him. I will say it was cool to see.
She was just at TGL like two, three weeks ago.
And so I don't know what the circumstances was. Obviously, not going to speculate on the show, but I do think that it's nice that we all had one farewell memory seeing Tita with Tiger, him joking with her, "Hey, I'm not going to suck tonight, Mom." I think she was at both of his first two matches. So obviously a hard thing to lose your mother. But, at least we kind of got to see Tiger connecting with her one last time on TV in setting. So,
and then to see Tiger, I know we're going to get into next week on the PGA Tour, but good to see Tiger as well, signing up to play some golf. So
playing the Genesis.
That's a win. That's a win.
So here we are back at the W Phoenix Open after my false start there. Thomas Dietrich birdies the final four holes to win by 7 shots. Belgium's first PGA Tour winner. He played at the University of Illinois. Justin Thomas has called him freakishly talented. This is a guy that's smiling. This has kind of been our luck this entire year. I've been on Thomas Dietrich.
You have, man. You have.
And then this was the week where I finally go away from him, and what does he do? He runs away with it. I think this is a guy whose game has been trending the last couple years. I mean, not that I didn't know of him, but I remember last year particularly watching him at the AT&T Pebble Beach Pro-Am and really saying, this is a guy I need to pay attention to because he's going to win soon. And it was just about a year later at the W Phoenix Open here where he gets it done. He always kind of stands out because he's got that G4 colorful glove. That's kind of his little iconic touch there. And Hugo Boss clothing guy, if I'm not mistaken. But you were out there this week, covering the golf for Golf Channel. As part of that kind of combined broadcast, CBS, what did you see from Thomas Dietrich this week that really just impressed you the most?
Well, just really freaking good golf. I mean, this is a golf course that, to kind of explain to you how it plays, it was really firm, the fairways this week. The rough was up enough to where it promoted some serious challenges heading into the greens because the greens were firm. And they tuck all the hole locations in the corners of the greens and really like up against the edges too, where I find this golf course in particular makes it so tricky to figure out what putts are doing in the last like thirds of the putts. So, if you put the hole locations in the middle of the green at this golf course, compare it to any other course, like on the PGA Tour, how much easier it plays, like when pins are like set up pretty easy, but they just tuck these hole locations and it puts a premium on driving, having the correct angles into the green. Yeah, honestly would rather have been in the desert than being in the primary rough. So that's just a little bit about the golf course. And it was a great week of weather. And Dietrich, who I saw maybe hit like 2 shots, is like, he was always around my group, but never in my group. I mean, come on, dude. Right? Like, how good is that golf? I mean, to win by that much, I think the one thought that I've been thinking about the most is how he's never won, like, as a professional, besides his win on the Challenge Tour, where he won by 12 shots in 2016. To me, that speaks to a talent of a player to be able to say, like, hey, If you can go win any golf tournament, I don't care where it is in the world, by 12 shots, it just shows what you're capable of as far as just being able to dominate a golf course in a field. And not shocking to see that his first win was by 7 shots, right? Like, this is what he's capable of. He's very talented, freakishly talented, like you said, JT said on the broadcast. But I was really... I think we all felt like he was going to come back to us. You know what I mean? Just felt like Thomas, over the last couple of years, he's shown that, or is he ready for it? I just didn't think he was. And I think, He just looked so good the entire week, and every time I thought he was going to take a step back, he took a step forward. Like, not just, you know, just even Sunday, starting out with a birdie on the first hole. Not the easiest hole on the off course. Makes birdie. And, you know, I think when you look at the scoreboard, too, mm-hmm. besides the seven-shot win, and you see what he shot on Sunday, which was tied for the lowest score on Sunday, it's like, come on, man. That's incredible.
Well, and I think if you are, I was reading the PGA Tour recap of his win, and there was a section about how he's really kind of gone deep on this meditation practice in the past few years and really kind of trying to help him center himself in big moments. It's interesting coming on the heels of the conversation we have with Joel Damon just about controlling the mental side of things, trying to get into a flow state. And you'd think that a guy coming down the stretch, trying to win your first PGA Tour event, you know, just let's just keep it on the rails. We have a lead. Let's just hold that lead. But to birdie the final four holes, to stick it, you know, as tight as he did on 16 in that stadium atmosphere.
That's a hard shot, man, back to that corner.
Really hard shot from a guy that very easily could just say, let's hit the middle of the green. Let's two putt everything and let's get out of here with the win. I thought that was, you know, pretty impressive to see him kind of hit the accelerator.
One of the biggest things I struggle with when the mental side on the PGA Tour, especially for guys who have everything to gain, is forward thinking. And he talked a lot about that this week, talking how he was a player that really struggled with getting out in front of himself. And if we talked to Joel recently on the podcast, I didn't listen to it, go listen to it, about this topic and how a guy like Scottie Scheffler and Maverick McNealy even talked to him about it, about how are you able to just keep it one shot at a time. And very few are elite at doing it day in and day out. And so I think that was the biggest hurdle that Thomas Dietrich had to get over this week. It wasn't going to be his golf. It was always going to be, can he mentally get through 4 days of golf and not get ahead of himself?
So the question that, of course, everyone's asking now, Colt mentioned this on the broadcast. You and I texted about this privately, and we've got a comment here from Dan Harding saying, it'll be interesting to see if Dietrich propels into a Ryder Cup spot. Seems like he just needed a breakthrough. So here's what I got for you, Smiley.
Okay.
2023 European roster. I'm going to read off all the names, and you tell me who you think you'd bump for Thomas Dietrich.
I was just thinking that in my head before you were about to read this. It's like, I'm trying to go through in my head who was on that team. Yeah, go ahead.
And so there have been a little bit of changes, right? So you have Rory McIlroy, of course. John Rahm.
Bump.
Hey, Rory, make some popcorn. You're watching TV. You're watching on TV at home, buddy. Dietrich's got your spot. Rory, we got John Rahm, who's since departed for LIV. Robert McIntyre, Victor Hovland, Tyrrell Hatton, who's also departed for LIV. Matt Fitzpatrick, Tommy Fleetwood, who was a captain's pick. Sepp Straka, captain's pick. Justin Rose, captain's pick. Shane Lowry, captain's pick. Nikolai Højgaard, captain's pick. And Ludvig Åberg, captain's pick.
Dude, that's a strong team, man. But
I know who I'd bump. I'm curious to see who you'd bump.
It's easy when you just read the names out. Fitzy's a no-brainer. First one out.
Agreed.
Nikolai Højgaard would be next. But the rest of that team's strong, man. Like, Luke doesn't have to overthink this one this year.
I think Rasmus is kind of almost playing better than Nikolai at this point.
Yeah.
I mean, he's going to have
He's
going to have a lot of options. I mean, just have the captain's pick. You know, Sepp Straka is playing as good as anybody on that team right now.
They're going to be tough to beat. I mean,
if they introduce a TGL element to this event, Justin Rose.
I think the I think the U.S. team is going to be tough to figure out who's going to make it still. The European team's way more locked in. And then throw in a guy like Dietrich with his talent that he could bring. Now, we'll see if it shows up at Bethpage, but it's a good fit for him, too, the way that golf course plays.
But let's also just remember that we did the same version of this heading into Rome, where we were probably about this time early, you know, coming out of winter, heading into spring, thinking the U.S. just, you know, was rampant at Whistling Straits and had a juggernaut team. How could they ever lose again? And then in the months that came, Ludvig started to emerge and all sorts of things started to change. Brian Harman wins a major, Wyndham Clark wins a major, the makeup of that team changes. So I think there's a lot of time for this to shake out, but it's always fun to start playing hypotheticals.
Well, at the beginning of the year, you know, I think, like last year, all the major champions were from the United States. the beginning of this year has been had a European flavor to it. You know, it's been only one American winner, I'm pretty certain. Based on a graphic I saw, I can't remember which one, who was the American. I'm trying to like play back in my head because Sepp won, Rory won. You had Nick Taylor winning, you had Hideki winning, and I couldn't, you know, Dietrich. I'm like, who was the American that won?
Harris English, the Farmers Insurance.
That's what it was. Yeah, there you go.
So there's your one American winner. So to kind of to stay within that top five section there, something that I briefly noted in the Super Bowl section of the show, Jordan Spieth. So Jordan has been the subject of a lot of chatter in the golf internet this last few weeks. So comes back obviously from that wrist surgery in the offseason. T69 his first start at the AT&T Pebble Beach Pro-Am, post surgery, even par. Lots of complaints online, you know, the news that he's getting a sponsor exemption into the Genesis alongside Ricky Fowler and Gary Woodland.
Do you want to get into that right now?
What's that?
Do you want to get into that right now? Are you a little fired up about that?
I am. I really am. I think I'm ready to go a little bit scorched earth here. I mean, because first of all, I mean, he goes out and his second start post wrist surgery ties for fourth in this event, WM Phoenix Open 16 under. It frustrates me so much, the intellectual dishonesty that I feel like a lot of people put out there around these sponsor exemptions and the state of the game. And it connects a little bit with the complaints about the way the broadcasts are currently set up, something we've talked about on the show a number of different times. It's like it's not incorrect to say that it's not a pure meritocracy for a Jordan Spieth to get a sponsor exemption into the Genesis, right? Or to say that it's not fun to watch a lot of commercials on a golf broadcast. But you also have to attach that to, we live in a real world, and so why are these things happening? You have to have commercials to pay for the broadcast. Like, you don't go work your job just for the good of whatever line of work you're in. You do it so you can earn a check and get paid to put food on the table. You know, same thing with Jordan Spieth. And the thing that really irks me with Spieth is, like, you could look at a lot of other sponsor exemptions that are more of a popularity contest or playing an internal political game than a guy who's won three majors and who's coming off of, I mean, I know it's not a major medical exemption because he was playing at the end of last year, but he's really been dealing with this injury for several years now without getting the wrist repaired and trying to kind of make it work. So now, like, we haven't even seen a truly healthy version of Jordan yet. Mm-hmm. And I'll say too, and this is, you can roast me for this comparison, but you know, me here, just layman, not, you know, playing professional golf. When I got the neck surgery done, you know, of course you feel better in the immediate aftermath, but it takes months. Like, I really haven't felt full mobility in my neck until really just this year, working on a lot of exercise and stuff like that. So that's to say with Jordan, his wrist is probably not even fully healthy yet. Permission to roast.
Is the neck finally feeling better? Can we blame all the wedge shanks on maybe the neck being not quite 100%? Just to throw that out there.
I'm glad you brought that up. Yeah, I think we're going to, in the accounting department for the wedge shanks last year, we're writing all those off on account of continued neck rehabilitation.
I'm going to write that down.
We were hurt and injured. Just put that down in Sharpie, please.
Yep.
To just close the thought before I pass it to you on Jordan, you know, it's just, I don't understand why people do this thing. It's like, this is a guy who everyone loves to watch play golf. He has the credentials, having won three majors, and he's a guy that's you know, he's not old. He's like early 30s. Let's take a look at him with the wrist and put some butts in seats while we're at it. It just fires me up every complaint that I get on this topic. And now I'm lost in my rant. Take it away, Smiley.
Well, no, the sponsors exemptions. It's a mess because a signature event shouldn't have this little amount of players in it. Well, I think in this next format of the PGA Tour, when there's 100 PGA Tour cards, just have 100 guys play in it. You don't need to cut down on the PGA Tour. If you got a PGA Tour card, you should be able to play in any event, especially when you cut down on PGA Tour cards. So in the future, it'd be nice to, you know, have sponsors exemptions, but it's for players who don't have a PGA Tour card. And use it that way, because right now it's a mess.
Yeah, I mean it's not incorrect to say that it's not a true meritocracy, but it's also like it's to call it, you know, farcical or anything other than what it really is like, what version of this do you want to see? Because if the version that people are asking for is one that will get no television ratings, won't have any money to pay for the thing, and in 2 years the whole tour is out of business, then we don't have any product. And it's like, just have a little bit of realism attached to the complaints you're making. Say, I don't like this, but I understand why it's the way that it is. That's where I land on the Jordan Spieth Smalls example.
Well, let's talk about his golf. Let's get into his golf.
I mean, just one tournament. It only took one tournament, 8 rounds, before we got a vintage Jordan Spieth moment with a par save on 11. I mean, the left-handed putter punch-out image was just like, we're back. We're all the way back.
Yes, but it really wasn't like that all week. I'm not sure what the final total ended up being for holes in a row without a bogey. It was in the 50s, I think, which is not typically the Jordan Spieth experience that we're all accustomed to over the last couple years, or maybe even before that, where it was just a little bit all over the place. The consistency wasn't there. And shoot, even Jordan, when we've had him on the show here, and we talked to him about, like, hey, you know, people really like watching you play golf because we don't know what's going to come next. He's like, yeah, I know. I kind of hate that because a lot of times that means I'm out of position. I'm doing something wrong. So I would like for it to be much more boring, where this week it was. But he did. Yeah. He was like, you know what, guys? I'm just going to hit something over there right on 11 and just keep you guys on the edge of your seats here, which is what happened in that situation. But it was funny, just walking around with him on Wednesday for an hour or so, just kind of talking about how he's doing, how's the wrist, how's the golf, how's everything. And my initial just read was, I didn't know where his mind was going to be coming off of Pebble Beach, because you never really know if we're like in panic mode after a week where you shoot 79 on Saturday. Now, he had a great Sunday. He had a bogey-free 67. And you're like, okay, that was a really great day, but I want to hear how the week went. And talking with him, he was like, dude, the first hole, like I jammed my wrist into the bunker. The
surgically repaired wrist?
Yeah. Oh, so like, wow. He had a jammed wrist the first 4 holes. He said that he wasn't able to do all of the things that he had been working on, so he was bailing on it the first like 54 holes of the golf tournament. So the things that he was working on in his golf swing, which is he's trying to take it more outside on the way back, he's trying to keep the club steeper on the way back, and trying to keep depth. So it's that rehearsal that looks so awkward, where, you know, at first I was like, oh, what's he doing here? But when you look at it on film and on video, you're like, oh, okay, I see what he's doing here. And for him, it gets to a position where he can shallow the golf club. He's got a really stable face and hits it really straight. And what I liked about what I saw from his golf, like just initially seeing the ball in the air for the first time in a long time, is that he was really comfortable with his irons, working it, you know, having it fall left, having it fall right. Where I think last year, when I would watch him, he struggled moving it right to left. And then when I looked at him face on, the grip just kept on getting weaker and weaker. Mm. Where the first thing I noticed was like, man, that left hand grip is much more neutral. So for him, that's a big step in the right direction. He's really pleased with the direction he's heading, like from a DNA standpoint. I know that's like people ask, like, what does that mean? Like, what is your swing DNA? Well, it's what you grew up with. It's something that's been measured for him when he's played well. Back in like 2015, he's been measured. So they're always been chasing that blueprint. And so when they've tried to chase this over the last couple of years, he hasn't been able to do it consistently because of his wrist. And it hasn't been, you would think it would be with the longer clubs, but if you remember me last year, I was like, dude, this is as good as he's ever driven it. Like, yes. He's driving it long, he's driving accurately it straight.
Too. Yeah.
And he said that he had more time in the golf swing with the driver to be able to consistently be able to match it up more, because he had more time for the club to get down to kind of time it up a little bit. But he said with wedges, he didn't have as much time, and so he found himself bailing out at times. Like, when you looked at his wedge stats, they were not nearly as good as what they normally are. So just from a golf standpoint, I was really excited for him this week heading into the week because it seemed like he had confidence in making it work both ways. He knew that he could commit to his wrist and what he was trying to work on this week. He knew it was going to be a test 3 weeks in a row. Like, he knew this was going to be a big challenge, especially, you know, not being all the way healthy yet, but working his way there. But hey, I think just getting off to a fast start, playing really consistent golf, it was a massive monumental week for him and for his team, which I thought the quote of the week, I think it was maybe Gabby Herzig that maybe wrote a short little article, or I saw a quick tweet about it, was from Cam McCormick just saying that, hey, this is as easy as Jordan has been in a long time to work with. And I thought that was very telling about the perspective and state of mind that he's in, if that makes sense, about how in the past he's been searching, trying too hard, but getting away from the game and just kind of knowing it's like, hey, this is what we're doing, and just staying on that and just overall being just happier and more fun out there. I think he loved the challenge of being in contention, which I felt like watching him on like Saturday, the competitive thing kind of came back later in the day, that expectation of like, okay, I can go win this golf tournament, but coming into the week, my expectations still need to be low and just like let everything come to me this week. That to me was like, okay, he needs to keep on getting into contention so that he's more and more comfortable by the time Augusta comes up, which, hey.
Yeah.
He plays good there.
Eyeball emojis. Eyeball emojis on that one. Smiley, hottest three letters in golf right now, VSP, which I believe stands for vertical swing plane. And you sent over a little video of Jordan chipping, because this is all in the world, the crazy yarn board world of Joe Mayo, just I love so much. The No Laying Up podcast, truly amazing. I was listening to it while traveling recently, and just all over the place.
It was insane, man.
Just like, truly insane. You had a little exchange with Joe regarding this. I'm going to, fingers crossed we can get this one right. It's the first share screen we've tried to do on Restream. But I have a video that you sent of Jordan. Oh, look at us. This works. Okay. Of Jordan chipping. And just, can you just help us understand this whole VSP thing?
Well,
as it relates
I'm still
to,
trying to learn to it. But what I can tell you is that Jordan is his angle of attack much steeper. He's always told me that he likes driving his chips. And I was like, what does that even mean? But when you see it on tape right here, you see how outside he takes it. Like, this is not under. It's not shut. Well, I guess he can chip with a little bit more of a shut face because of his left wrist angle. Think of Brooks Koepka. Think of Dustin Johnson. Guys that played with lead wrist flexion. He plays with that. And Scottie Scheffler as well. Like, very similar to this. He gets it very steep and outside on the way back. And he's coming down angle attack-wise. I mean, just right on top of it and doesn't make a divot.
So, and this was something Joe talked about in that No Laying Up, you know, it just that there for so long, the seemingly the line of thought around pitching the ball, chipping the ball has been, oh, you got to get shallow. It's kind of feeling inside. And this is the thing he's been kind of railing against. And I guess he said that there are a lot of different ways to get it done. It's just that steep is not bad. Can you explain a little bit why that's the line of thought that Joe's putting out there that he wants people to understand?
Well, I don't understand quite the math when it comes to the vertical swing plane, angle of attack, spin waft, all those things that he talked about. I could probably feel it and tell you it's like, oh, it's you know, it's the shaft, you know, being much more like this, it's set up or standing a little closer to the ball. Things that I probably already do in my pitching and chipping because I feel like I'm a good chipper that I naturally have always done. That probably translate to that math being correct. But what I do know with chipping is that when you get inside and you try to help it up and you have a bunch of knee flex and you're into the earth, like you're not getting standing taller on the way up. These are all feels that I've always had, but just translate to the proper numbers where you measure it. And you see, you know, like Jordan, for instance, he cuts everything with pitching. Like, he doesn't hit very many draw pitches. He can. He probably have to shut the face. But typically, everything he does is with a cut motion.
Well, there we go. This is the debut of our live stream video integration here. which I'd say now you sent me a few others. So if we want to
fire
up
any, man, yeah, pull up the putter with Jordan if you got it.
Okay, let me do that.
That's the last thing to talk about.
Let me ask you a question on that one. Is it? And I'm gonna pull up. It's the made putt. I'm not sure which hole it is, but is it correct? Was he putting with a TP Mills putter?
Yeah, it's TP. Yeah.
Can I indulge you just for a quick second?
You got a TP Mills?
The Tinkerer's got it all, buddy.
There you go.
Tinkerer has it all.
Oh,
in fact,
that's the OG, man.
So
that's
this
the OG TP Mills.
This is my first putter I ever got. My dad pulled this out of the Lost and Found at San Joaquin Country Club in Fresno, California, and I got it refinished a couple years ago. The OG TP Mills.
I know there's got to be people in the chat that have that exact same putter because it was that old school Scotty and that were very popular putters. It was kind of like if Scotty and TP were probably one of the first two original putter makers, I would say, that were not from big corporations, right?
I think that's correct. I mean, I every once in a while I'll pull that thing out and give it a run and realize, oh, wait, there's like zero forgiveness to this putter whatsoever. there's a reason why we shelved it and we moved on to technology. But TP was kind of like Scotty Cameron before Scotty Cameron in a way.
How good is this Kaufman cam here at the seventh hole with Jordan Spieth putting for bird? So I talked to him about like what's the difference between this and the gamer that we're accustomed to seeing. You wouldn't be able to tell on TV if you had a different putter because it looks exactly the same. And he said this face makes it feel like for him that it's more like a mallet in the way it sets up. Like for him, easier to aim. His other one, he felt like kept on getting a little shut when he would set up to it. Like he was fighting aiming it. So it feels like a mallet, meaning not necessarily as much the stroke, more so when you set it down, it just feels much more square to him. So he's not fighting his setup.
Is that like a sight line thing? Like what's painted on the head itself?
No, it looks exactly the same, man. Like if anything, his top line is like a little bit thicker on this putter, okay. But I don't think that's by design or by intention. I just know how thin his other one is. I putted with it on this hole actually in the practice round. I made a couple putts. We'll see what ends up happening as far as where he ends up going as far as putters for the rest of the year. I think this week he felt most comfortable with this. I know they probably want to get him back into a Scotty, which is what I'm sure he's going to be doing all next week, which is to see if they can get him in something he's used with that company for a long time. So I'm sure he's going to go do some practice. A lot of guys actually go this week to their their Scotty Cameron studio because it's in San Diego this week.
Right,
it's in Carlsbad. So I'm sure him, along with many other guys, will probably go see Paul, which he's a great guy and does great jobs as far as fitting guys for putters.
Positive, almost a stroke gain positive putting this week for Jordan Spieth. So clearly someone's working out there. So
he said something else too that it was blowing my brain as far as like how he described it. And I've never gotten this in the weeds as far as putters go. He was talking about the draft, I think. Have you ever heard this terminology?
The draft.
Or the draft. I'm not sure exactly which word he said. But
you're talking about the stroke, like the way? Because
he said something about the – because like he had one putter made.
Sure.
I think it was probably a Scotty brand. And then on the back, like on the very – the top of the putter – or no, excuse me, the bottom of the putter, like on the inside – of like the toe, I would say probably this far off of the heel, actually, there was a little bit of lead tape. And it was only about this big. So like very small slip of lead tape. I was like, what is this for? He's like, he explained something with the draft or drag of how the putter, basically for him, how it releases and how this little bit of weight right here would help for whatever he was talking about. I need to ask again because I need to better understand what he was talking about. I just kind of nodded my head. I was like, oh, yeah, that makes perfect sense. I'm like, what is he talking about?
Well, what's interesting is that when I got that old Terlium Scotty refinished, I had the guy who did it inserted some like lead weights in the shaft, like where the
it's not the weights though. This is just some wet tape at the bottom.
But I just the location of it was talking to Dennis Paulson, former tour pro, about it, and he was like, oh, okay, if you're gonna do that, it's going to change like your sweet spot location where you're putting. Like you have to hit in a different spot in the face because the way it's going to you know, affect the way the kind of the putter swings. Now, I don't know if that's anything to do with drag or draft, but
he was fighting pulls, I think. And I think there had something to do with how the putter
slowing down that part. That's interesting.
Yeah. God. But so this one, the worst miss for a putter is when you hit it in the heel and you miss putts left.
Yes.
It's the worst feeling for a pro. Yeah. It is the worst feeling for a pro.
Yeah, that's interesting. We need to get a putter tinkerer on or get Jordan on to kind of run us through that because as a tinkerer, I'm fascinated by it. Yeah. Because
you want to feel on short putts that you don't have to slow down.
Yeah.
Like you want to feel like you can putt through the golf ball and you're not going to miss it left. Like you can release it and it's not going to go left. So I think that's probably the feeling he has with the stability of the mallet feeling in this blade, mm-hmm. which I've never had many besides like maybe a different neck on a blade that would make anything feel like a mallet to me.
Yeah.
So that's a really interesting way he describes that, if you know what I mean.
Yeah. I mean, the way it's shafted, obviously, that's a whole world of, you know, I know that there are implications there in terms of how the head's supposed to swing, where you're going square to square, whether there's more toe hang or whatever else. But yeah, I mean, it's that is a tinker's paradise world.
yeah. Sorry. I'm sure there's other people that they want for us to talk about, but that was just kind of got in the weeds there, didn't we?
We did, but that's listen. That's what we do on the show, especially as you know, if you're gonna like, it's like you're giving me bait. You're like, hey, you want to talk about putters? You want to talk about tinkering? You want to talk about?
I'll go
down that road.
I like doing these live streams. I really liked how we can get the videos up there. That's really cool.
Kind of works, right?
But the one other guy too. I don't know if you downloaded the Maverick McNeely one.
Yes, I have.
This
that
was
for you.
Fascinating to me.
All right,
because
let me pull this for you.
You know how big of a fan we are of Maverick. He was fantastic on the podcast when we had him on at the end of the year. And his I haven't looked at his chipping that close before. And I was like, oh, I'll get my phone out. This would be a really cool video because I was just standing right here. We weren't on air yet. And I zoom in here to get it a little tighter. And I was like, holy crap, man. His left wrist is like cupped and like strong, where I would say that most good pitchers – he kind of hit that a little hard, but most good pitchers are a little more on the weaker side. Like it honestly looks like he's set up to hit a full swing. Like and then you look at his stats too, like around the green stats for Maverick, like he's like a top 10 pitcher on the tour. So there's many ways to do it. And there's gotta be some really good matchups that he has. To me, when we're talking about the VSP and stuff, like this doesn't look crazy steep to me. Like this looks more on the shallow side, which I think there's plenty of still ways to chip. I still feel
I don't mean to cut you off there, but I think that was kind of the Joe Mayo's drive. Is like everyone made Joe Mayo the steep guy, the crazy angle of attack guy. He's like, no. Like there are a lot of different ways to get it done. I just want people to know that steep isn't necessarily bad.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. And
maybe Mav goes about it a different way.
I've always believed that when people are bad chippers, they're either too steep or too shallow. And what Joe kind of talks about is that you can't be too steep. I kind of disagree with that a little bit because I've felt like I've been too steep before and I feel like I'm going to hit the top of the ball and just knife everything. So if you can explain that feeling a little bit, then I'm just like, okay, well, that could be a setup thing.
I wonder if there's part of that because I mean
you need matching setups because if you stand close enough to it, the handle high enough, you probably can't get too steep.
I'll say this again, take this with a huge grain of salt from an amateur perspective, but after the episodes we did, I guess it was last fall with Victor Hovland and Max Homa, I'm of course like, oh, I'm gonna go out and try all this new chipping stuff. I'm gonna get super steep. I'm gonna like come up and out of it. I'm gonna kind of like lean forward on it and. Boy, did I blade the heck out of some of those some of those chips trying to do it. So I'm sure there are things that I'm not doing properly where Joe would say, hey, you could get this deep, but you got to do all these other things too to make it work.
You know what's interesting too, looking at this setup? Look how square his feet are. Yeah. Like how square he just looks everything. I think that's something back when we watched pitchers growing up, like on the TV.
Yeah.
Everybody was always so open. That left foot would be flared out. Like, think Seve Ballesteros. Like, he was very open, very flared out. That chest would be a little bit more forward. So, I see the guys more like this setup now, and it feels awkward as crap to me because I like to get much more open. Like JT even, like he looks like a lot like this, and he's a fantastic pitcher of the golf ball, but
one of the best.
It's all about having the right matchups.
All right, this is interesting stuff. So we need Smiley to keep shooting videos like this when you're out there on the ground so we can make these part of the live. And of course, people have questions about specific things in these videos.
Yeah,
fire
them in the chat.
Fire
them
away.
That's why we're here.
We want to hear them. We want to see them. And we want to answer them. So here's where I'm going to give you two options as to where you want to go next. Do you want to talk about?
Well, here I got breaking news here. Okay. Kai Trump is just committed to Miami to play golf.
I thought she already committed to Miami, or maybe she officially signed.
I don't know. She holds a 1.2 NIL valuation.
That's not going to be tough to sell NIL deals for. I'm sure she's going
to. And we're not going to go there. I just wanted to throw it out there because it just popped up on my Twitter.
Do you want to talk Scottie Scheffler or Luke Clanton next?
Let's talk Luke Clanton.
Love that. Okay, so Luke, of course, has 19 of the 20 points needed to earn his PGA Tour card via the PGA Tour U Accelerated program. I was looking back at this. He's made 7 PGA Tour cuts now. He's had 4 top 10s in those PGA Tour events. They all earned him a point. Would have earned more. Like, he'd already have his card now if they'd retroactively applied the Luke Clanton rule another bonus point for top fives to the way he played in several tournaments. And he's made the cut at the U.S. Open last year and obviously got a point for that start as well. So Luke needs to go 5 under in his final 8 holes on Friday to make the cut and earn that final point to get his tour card, and just narrowly misses that birdie on 18. You walked around with them on Friday.
It was fun.
Obviously, you know, I saw some, you know, rebuttals to your tweet. You said you feel gutted for the guy. We're not. Everyone knows Luke Clanton's going to make it to PGA Tour.
Yeah,
right?
We're
not like this is his last chance. This is like U school. Like,
I responded to one guy, and then like there was like 10 more. I was like, what? Why are people like taking this the wrong way here? Like, he's not going to still make it on the PGA Tour. It was just. Dude, he's playing hard
and, you know, almost gets it done. Yeah.
I mean, my perspective is that I just walked with him the last 3 hours and I saw how badly he wanted it and how hard he grinded. Like, that's all I was saying.
And he'll have other opportunities. I think I'm pretty sure he got a sponsor exemption to the Valero. So I'll have a shot there.
I think he's at Valspar.
Too. Valspar. So yeah. I mixed it up my V sponsor events.
But I think he got that one for winning the college event last year.
Oh, okay. That would make sense. So at some point in time, I mean, he's going to get this thing through end of season awards. Like, it's going to happen this year. It just, the timing is variable, and then what that means for whether or not he finishes out the season with Florida State and what sort of discussions he's had there. So just your thoughts on Luke's week, where he stands now, what you saw in walking around with him. Obviously not the start to the week you wanted, but dang near gets it done coming down the stretch.
Dude, I think he could win at Valspar. Like, that is such a good track for him.
What, now tell me why you think, like, you talk a lot about like superpowers, different guys, you know, what makes them good. What are Luke's, does he have a standout superpower, or is it like he does everything really, really good?
No, it shocked me how wrong I was about this, because my just overall impressions of Luke was exactly what you just talked about, which is like, yeah, he's just, you know, pretty good at everything. Like, no dude, he hammers it. He's in top 10 in club head speed on the PGA Tour.
I was not aware of that.
122 club head speed. He's about 183 ball speed. And I didn't know this. I was not aware. I had not seen him play. And then I was like, all right, I'm going to go and just kind of dive a little bit into the Luke Clanton stat tree. I was like, holy crap, he hammers it. And then I was walking, he was playing with JT the first 2 days in Phoenix. And I was walking off the 13th green, and Luke was tapping in, and JT and I were at the edge of the green. And it's always a lot of pressure when JT's just sitting there watching you call. Like, he's literally staring at me like this close, and I'm talking to a mic. He's like, don't screw up. But we're walking off the green. I was like, well, what do you think of Luke? And he's like, his ball makes a different sound. He's like, he's really good. So that, just for JT to say that, you know, for a guy who's played with however many players he's played with on the PGA Tour, to say it's like, dude, his ball makes a different sound. That is what you need on the PGA Tour now. Like, you got to be able to compress the golf ball, hit it hard. Young guy with tons of confidence. I love his moxie, love his grit. He's like, when you talk about superpowers, like, yes, he hits it long and hard, but that next competitive bucket, like, he's way up there in that. Like, he's in the Scottie Scheffler, Justin Thomas level of being able to lock in and focus, and appears to me to not be much of a forward thinker. Like, he's a guy that could win a lot in a season because of his ability to just lock in. Just his competitive spirit is so awesome to watch.
Yeah, I mean, a guy with that drive at that age, and you really the composure as well, right? Like, it takes a lot of stones to be a collegiate player and get these sponsor exemptions and not only make cuts, but, you know, dang near win several of these things. Like, that says a lot about where his psyche is now and his drive is now. Do you any thoughts on, to wrap up on Luke Clanton, because you mentioned the competitive fire thing, and I want to get to Scotty on that point eventually.
Yeah,
but let you wrap on Luke.
You know, I was the putt on 15. It comes up right on the front of the edge, and I was thinking to myself, or I actually said it on the broadcast, it's like, if it comes down to that extra little roll between that and a PGA Tour card, end up that being the case. It just with Luke, I'm so excited to watch to see what he does the rest of the year. I think that he's still a candidate to be on that Ryder Cup team. I know that's crazy as it sounds. And then I also started thinking about this. So that PGA Tour Accelerated program.
Yes.
Do you get a point for a start in a major?
Yes.
So that's what I'm a little like. That's kind of what I'm wondering about, if Augusta National's waiting to see if he gets his PGA Tour card, so that they're not the reason why him getting an exemption into Augusta gets him a PGA Tour card.
Correct.
So it'd be interesting to see if the Masters waits to see how he plays at Valspar in March, and if he gets his PGA Tour card, great, boom, got you an exemption. But I think if he's not playing at Augusta, something went terribly wrong, because precedent has been set as far as inviting the best amateurs in the world. Like, if you stand on the grounds of Bobby Jones and his amateur career and what he means, obviously, to Augusta National, and you have what Luke Clanton has done, which has been arguably one of the greatest amateur players to play in the last couple of decades, and for him to be passed along and not get a spot into Augusta, and we've been giving exemptions over the last decade to amateurs that are deemed worthy. I mean, I'm tiptoeing as much as I can here, but it would be
Do you remember the timing of Gordon Sargent's invite? Gordon didn't qualify in, right?
He won the national championship as an individual as a freshman. So he won the Haskins Award. He won the Natty. He was, I think, the number one amateur player in the world at that time.
But none of those things earn you an exemption.
No.
Right. It was just a notable amateur invitation, special invitation. I'm just trying to remember when that came.
It was probably right around now.
So there's time. I think you make a really interesting point there of just looking at the way that program works. Because obviously Augusta National doesn't do anything without carefully considering all the ramifications of what they're doing. We're going to get to, you know, or maybe we'll get to in the show or maybe in the future, but, you know, there have been some announcements in the past couple of days about live golf pathways into majors for both the U.S. Open and the Open Championship. PGA of America and Augusta National have not made anything formal quite yet. I'm sure they're kind of, Augusta National in particular, probably waiting to see what that landscape looks like and the way the other ones are crafted before making the decision that makes the most sense for them. So that's all by way of saying, I'm sure they're paying attention to what's happening with that program. And the last thing I want to do is compromise the collegiate game in some way, shape, or form by being the governing body. Although I will say, I think that he has to actually make the start for it to get the point and then to earn the card. So like you wouldn't be making the decision until mid-April at least.
To me, that would be an uneventful way to earn your PGA Tour card.
Mm.
So I don't know if this is the reason why that he hasn't been given a spot yet, but it would be really cool for him just to play well at Valspar, make the cut, and then potentially get a spot. I don't know if they give spots away that late in the process. I don't know.
Yeah. It's one to keep an eye on. I mean, you got to think he's going to get an invite, but that's all information that makes, you know.
If he finishes maybe top two, so if he wins, I imagine that would get him into the Masters. No? But he's an amateur. I'm not sure exactly how that works as far as.
That's right.
If that.
How you get. That's right. Like, if you obviously there's
you don't earn points.
You win.
Right. But would imagine the Masters would.
Yes. You got to. I think what you are saying here is like, you think strongly he is going to be invited to the Masters, and we're giving it time for the invite to come.
Yeah.
But it's just I think they're probably what's happening is there are a lot of different ways he can earn that invite in, and Augusta National is probably just letting that process play out before they extend invitation early, because he might find his way in it on his own, which would be a cooler way to do it. So
I'm going to check his OWGR. It was 90th at the beginning of the week. It's probably about the same because he didn't make the cut. Yep. But top 100 player in the world as an amateur, I mean, that seems like...
It's pretty dang good stuff. Just to switch over, because you mentioned the competitive fire for Scotty. So this is another Charlie Hume prop bet gone wrong. After I saw what I saw at Pebble Beach, I'm like, I don't care what the odds are. Top 10, lock it in. And Scotty shot 41 on his final nine to finish tied for 25th at 9 under. Showed a little emotion out there, a little slamming the clubs into the bags, which you and I both have said privately. Like, I love that side of Scotty. Like, I think I love the totality of the human being that is Scotty Scheffler. He can be this guy who has a strong faith, a family man, a good husband, a good father. This really nice guy, but he can also be a great hang, a fiery competitor. He's a very layered individual, even though sometimes the media and others paint him as being vanilla. So, just thoughts on the way the week went. I mean, still obviously coming back from injury. And then also we have another video of some putting stuff, and you talked to his putting coach, and you have some observations from that practice session. You want me to pull that up now, or do you want to wait till you?
Just to talk about the competitive stuff.
Sure.
He is a competitive psycho.
I love it.
I mean, psycho. Just when you compete against him in anything, he just wants to win. And I think we're seeing a little bit of frustration that's for him, in Phoenix, I think there was some moments that he just, whether it was just not having everything that day. You know, he got off to such a good start on Sunday, and then it just kind of went away. What did he end up shooting on Sunday? Was shoot even?
It's a good question. I just looked at his back nine.
Oh, he shot one over, man. He was 4 under through 6 holes, and he finishes his last 7 holes. He was 5 over par. And I think the coolest storyline of the week is that Scotty Scheffler that day was playing with Will Chandler, who top 10, finished T6, Monday qualified in. He's got his PGA Tour card via Q School, but a lefty, saw him play this week. And that's what I think we're going to miss about the PGA Tour.
This is the last Monday qualifier for the WPX Open.
The Will Chandler story, who just changed the trajectory of his career, of getting some funds in, 300 grand, finishing T6. And now, he's going to have starts the rest of the year, but still, like, that to be able to go out and, have that good of a week, and especially against Scotty Scheffler, man, he beat him by 6, playing in the same group as him.
Yeah, I mean, I completely agree with that. I pulled some tweets. I mean, I think I saw Trevor Immelman comment on this. I saw some stuff from James Nitties. I think you and Shane Bacon exchanged some tweets. Daniel Rapoport, was kind of talking a little bit about this at the end of the week. It's these stories. Again, I want to be careful here too, because I've also said you have to be realistic about all the things that go into creating a product. And so with the whole tour card shrink from 125 to 100, it stinks, but I understand that they're trying to create more value for the 100 guys that get the tour card. Because last year the complaint was, wait a second, I got this card and I can't even get into Sony. I can't get into all these tournaments. So,
especially the Q School guys, man, they weren't getting into anything.
And so I understand you have to make some changes so that you can really create a sense of value, and you know, if I am a PGA Tour member, that means a real thing. I can gain entry to all these tournaments. But I never understood, like, you can shrink field sizes, you can shrink card sizes, all that stuff. Why does a Monday qualifier have to go away? I just don't.
Well, what they are arguing is that because we're cutting down on cards and spots into the tournament, they want those extra spots at the bottom of the field to go to members versus going to non-members. And that's the argument. It's like, hey, we're taking away, but the Q school, or excuse me, the Monday qualifier spots, we're not going to keep those in there because we want to make sure all the members keep getting in. But here's the argument. This week is the argument. The best player in the world, Scottie Scheffler, just played with the guy who Mondayed in. Yes, he has a PGA Tour card, but he just beat him by 6 on Sunday, straight up. Like, hey, I'll give you 3 aside, Scotty. Like, that's what, now, I would say that the much more of the Monday qualifying story is where a guy with no status, like, literally changes his career because, you know, now he's got money to play with to go play into more things, but Will's going to be playing on the PGA Tour, so that.
Well, I mean, I think, you know, my pitch to the membership at that point would be, okay, guys, we're still talking about product. Like, here, Smiley and I are talking about this on a Monday, about what a great story. We wouldn't have mentioned Will Chandler on the show otherwise, but, you know, the way he made it into this tournament and the way he played, that's a really good storyline. That's great for the PGA Tour product. So it's like, guys, you know, if we're doing a lot of things to make sure that all of you get playing opportunities, but guess what? There are going to be a few spots at the end of each of these tournaments that we're going to save for Monday qualifiers because they add to an overall storyline and interest.
Back,
I mean, I think that to me is like, I understand a lot of the other changes, but that one, it's like, you're just kind of shooting yourself in the foot not having interest in those.
I would watch a Netflix Monday qualifier series.
A lot of people would. I think you know, it's
documenting
just
their stories of Mondaying in and their week. Like, I would have loved to watch a feature on Will Chandler, the beginning of the week to the end. Like, that would have been really cool television that I think people would love to watch.
So on the topic of Scotty's putting, you want to look at this video?
Let's take
a look at this.
This is like a great putting tip that I felt like would help any amateur or any good player. So I was sitting there, and of course, like, he was doing this for 5 minutes, and this was his last putt that he had gone back to his base training. That's where he's probably got a line down. But before all this, he was going around the circle of this hole, and he would take it back to the very top of his swing, so right there, and he would pause. He would pause there for about 2 seconds. So he would take it back, pause, and then he would follow through. And he did. He walked around the hole and hit about, I'd say, 10 putts. He's just putting about 4 or 5 footers around the hole. And I thought that was such a good drill for any amateur, any pro, to be able to focus on the rhythm of the stroke and not rushing the downswing. So when you look at how Scotty's stroke now looks very smooth, a lot less maybe rigid as it was, he's just working on the top of the swing where it feels like he doesn't get quick in transition.
That's really interesting, and one that I'm gonna give a try as well. Positive. Yeah. Another guy, I think he's positive 0.95 strokes gained putting this week, I think is what I had here.
Yeah.
So
I'll talk about Phil Kenyon just briefly.
Or 0.53, I'm sorry.
If you want to take the looping video down, I can just tell you briefly about Phil Kenyon, talking with him on the range. His or at least the side of the putting green. We talked a little bit about how nervous he was on the Thursday at the Hero World Challenge, where he used this saw grip for the first time, because in the year prior, Scotty was like, hey, what do you think about this grip? What do you think about this grip? Trying to try different things. And Phil's like, you know, really, he felt like the only grip change that he needed to do was to go to a saw, because he had too much radial in his right hand. In his putting stroke, he said, very similar to his golf swing, a lot of tendencies that Scotty does really well in his golf swing, he had in his putting stroke. He said that there was a way in which his right hand would get too radial, and it caused him.
Wait, his right or his left?
Right.
Oh, are you? Oh, this see, this is where the camera flip thing's getting me. I'm like,
it's like that. No, dude, this is your left hand. No, this is my right, guys. Sorry.
This is Smiley and I had a long off camera discussion prior to the show about whether or not he should flip his camera, and I think he did or mirror it, and now I'm just completely thrown. Okay, so we're definitely talking about the right hand, right? Okay,
we are, and he was. Everything that he would line up, because for a while in the years past, he was using a line in his golf ball to line everything up, and he had a tendency to line up everything too far to the right. And eventually, they came to a agreement. It's like, all right, we're not using a line of our ball, and the spiders were finally found something he could line up very straight. And the thing that kind of surprised me a little bit is that. He's like, dude, his intuition and green reading is unbelievable. Like, just an incredible, like, hey, what's this 10-footer do? He'll pop a ball down. It's like, where does it need to roll over? And it's, like, perfect every time. He sees and reads greens really well, which I think for a long time we're like, oh, he's not a good green reader. And so making this change, he's cleaned up his putting stroke, and – he's Justin Rose as an example. Like, when you think of Justin Rose now, don't you think of him as a really good putter?
Mm-hmm.
Well, he said for a very, very long time, Justin Rose was a very poor putter. And that Justin Rose has turned himself into a top 20 putter in the world. And he believes that Scotty has all of the ingredients and capabilities of being a top 20 putter in the world. And I was sitting here thinking, I was like, well, he's kind of the best ball striker in the world, iron player. Mm. Drives in, you know, he's top 20 in distance. He's, you know, very, very really accurate, hitting it that long. An incredible short game. And I was like, wait, if he gets to a top 20 putter, oh, God.
It's over. That's interesting. Right? Well, it's interesting because I want to dig into a little bit of some of the technique here and just talking, you know, about Phil Kenyon, you know, the stuff that they've been working on. Because you make the Justin Rose comparison, and when you say, hey, think of Justin Rose putting, the first thing I think of is that little tuck he does where he's got something that he's trying to correct and he's really being deliberate about a physical practice or reminder so that he can putt the ball the way he needs to putt the ball. And so I aim it too far right when I putt as well. So it's interesting thinking about Scotty, great green reader. They clean up the technique of that sort of that radial stuff with his right hand that you're talking about. And so then what is it about, like when Phil is working with Scotty and they're taking away the line and things like that, you know, what is he doing mechanically? So, or even just when he's setting a ball down without a line so that he gets away from putting the ball too far right. Maybe I'm not asking that question.
Well,
precisely
I'll explain to you exactly what the process is like, because the video that we were just watching, that's his straight line putt. He's working on the technique of his stroke. And this is the process that pretty much any good pro will take, or any good putter. They'll get on a straight line. They'll make sure that the stroke is clean to where when they get off the line, now all of these things that we talk about, the great intuition he has as a green reader, practicing with a leveler.
No visual feedback,
like
right?
Most good putters practice with a leveler. And if you're familiar with what that is, it's a slope reading device that you put on the ground, and players will read the greens and then they'll guess the slope. So it calibrates what their mind sees as far as how much, like if it's 2 degrees of slope on an 8-footer, they generally have an idea with whether they use aim point or not, where the high line is. And so this is their whole process of how they go through this. And when things are off, like when the stroke doesn't feel right or their eye line's wrong, and you go practice these 8-footers with 2 degrees of slope breaking right, well, you're not going to see the line. Like you're going to be looking, you're going to be all discombobulated. Any putters felt that way, and it could be they're too far open, or like for Scotty, it was maybe he was getting it too shut, like his tendencies would be, and then eventually have to, you know, push it through the ball with and hitting the heel too much. That's why you work on your stroke in a controlled environment where you have straight lines. And so when you get off, like if you didn't roll it well in your practice, you're able to go back to your starting blocks. It's like, okay, this is my home. This is where I hone it in. And now we're going to go and do positive drills, like the pause drill, where it's like, okay, I'm working only on pausing at the top of my stroke to clean the rhythm up. So then when, you know, I get into competition, it's like, all right, I'm going to go through my routine. I trust that my technique's good. And maybe my only thought is, hey, let's just have good rhythm and a good pause and transition. And that's what putters and players, good putters, you know, that's kind of the processes that they'll run on every single day. And the ingredients change. You know, sometimes you need a little bit more of this or a little bit more of that. And when guys are putting really well, they don't have to think about any of it. It's just natural and instinctive because they rep it every single day.
That's interesting. Yeah, I mean, that's a scary world for everyone else to think about. If Scottie Scheffler can get it to a place where he's a top 20 putter.
I mean, just think about when Charlie starts popping a chalk line down at Hope Valley. That's when people are going to start turning heads, when you're going to have Charlie at Hope Valley with the string working on his technique. But I just don't think we're going to see that out of Charlie. I think he's much more of a grab a whatever's in the cooler, hop in the golf cart, talk his ear off on the range, and then go to the first tee.
That is the headspace I need to be in. I'm very much I'm a show and go guy. My best round to date, I'd hit no range balls and two putts. I played tennis that morning, just showed up, let it rip. And so I think I need a little bit more of that in my life. I'd love to. I mean, I think there are interesting practice things in there. Like, I think anyone could benefit from the drill you're talking about with Scotty, just like that pause at the top and rhythm. Because I think, especially for amateurs, I'll tell you one thing I'll never do is take a level out to the green and try to see if my brain matches the slope and the way that it's like. So for a lot of us, I think it's the things we can glean from the professional routines that you're laying out there. Very simple things that just, you know, keep it so you're not tearing your hair out wondering why. You know, why you're missing putts, or why you're, you know, you're yanking a little two footer, things like that. It's cool to hear about the way the pros go about it, and then pull the things that are actually applicable to the amateur game from those. So that's Scotty there. We're deep into the show, Smiley, but I have a few remaining kind of topics here that I just want to maybe close out with. I'm gonna give you some options here. We have a fan question about just the broadcast, which players are being shown. We have a memo sent to LPGA players about slow play and some very serious punishments that maybe could be a guidebook for the PGA Tour as they try to kind of curb their own slow play issues. And then we have some stuff on LIV, the first tournament of the season, some exemptions going to those. So where do we want to
You got to show real quick. You got to show the Ricky pictures.
Oh, yes. That's good.
For anybody that happened to miss it. I mean, it seemed like I was getting collaboration requests from every golf publication that there exists of like ripping my picture and then just putting my tweet.
I mean, this is
when I saw this cat on the green wearing this. It's like, oh my god, just wearing shoes and sunglasses today, huh, Rick? He's like, oh yeah. Little did I know he had like beginnings of the flu, and so
was that what it was? It was a little flu.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was shout out to our guy Jackson Brown, who we took this as inspiration, and we decided shop up, you know, SK and some camo, Tiger and some camo, Jack Nicklaus, and we were like, what's the punchline to this joke? I was like, you know what, old Tom Morris in camo. And
I mean, that is how good is that Photoshop right there?
I love that so much.
Here's Ricky at 8. He's not there.
A plus.
How good is that?
A plus shopping. That was I am. I need more on the backstory behind that. Is it like a new Puma print?
I don't know. They're always toting the boundaries of different, and Ricky doesn't mind being different.
Ricky does not mind being different. Yeah, no, I enjoyed that greatly.
So let me think. What are the questions on the broadcast thing? I can answer them quickly.
Yeah, so the broadcast thing was, I think the gist of the question was, you know, non-marquee players not getting their shot shown on TV when they're in contention. So in particular, his question, this is from Davis Sires on Instagram, just asking about Matt McNeely on Saturday. And here's what I told him briefly, and I told him we'd ask you on the show, is just that the WM Phoenix Open in particular has a unique situation related to broadcasters where CBS broadcasts the event in sort of connection with Golf Channel for the early window on years in which they don't have the Super Bowl, which was this year. Fox had the Super Bowl. And when they do have the Super Bowl, it's a, you know, Golf Channel NBC product all the way through. So it's a different set of producers and directors from CBS that are making editorial decisions about who they show. That's one reason. The other is that's unique to WM is if you're a producer or director for any, you know, network, NBC, CBS, you name it, at this tournament, you're going to try to show as many shots on the 16th hole as possible because there's great fan viewer interest in the spectacle that is that stadium hole. Anything I'm missing there or just your thoughts on why that happens?
Well, I think that let's just use a normal week as an example. If you're not a marquee guy, and this is just, I would say commercials probably play a bit of a factor here in this, but you know, if you're not in that final group or that maybe that even that second to last group, unless you're running that day, like they stick with the guys, man. It's not my decision on who they show, but I could pretty much, I'm in agreement. Yes, it would be great for everybody to get on TV a lot, but the bottom line is you only have one TV that you can show a shot, and for the most part they'll stick with their stars, and hey, they get sold on shots. When I mean selling, you have people in tape that record shots that they feel like should make the broadcast, and that a lot of times, like when you see, oh, let's head over to 13 with Aaron Rye, and next thing you know, Aaron Rye's chipping you, and you feel like when you're on the couch watching, you're like, well, this is going in, right? And a lot of times it does. Like, it's not going to be a chip that goes to 15 feet, and you're like, oh, yeah. You know, like the leaders are on the second hole. Why are we at 13? Something's about to happen. But
yes,
it's not perfect. I think it's, you could argue, maybe one of the hardest things to produce because there's so many, like every single player is its own, you know, product that you could potentially show on the TV. And so what they do, they stick with the final group, they stick with the stars, and I guess it's, unfortunately, it's a play better thing, but I guess you'll say too is that there is other options now with PGA Tour Live. Like, correct. there's plenty featured of ways groups, that people can watch
featured holes.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
It's not perfect.
Well, and then to kind of just take that into another potential topic here that just relates to the telecast, slow play. Thought this was very interesting, a memo that went out this last week from the LPGA. So the current policy regarding slow play on the LPGA is that a player in a group which is out of position may be penalized for an unreasonable delay if the player takes more than 60 seconds to play one shot, including putts, and or the player exceeds the maximum allotted amount of time for total strokes time on a given hole by more than 10 seconds. That's the stated policy. The memo that went out this week states that players can now be fined if they go 1 to 5 seconds over the time allotment, can be assessed a one-shot penalty if they go 6 to 15 seconds over the time allotment, and can be assessed a two-shot penalty if they go 16 seconds or more over it. To me, Smiley, if you're going to send that memo out, you send it out with intent of enforcing it.
Yeah.
You like this?
Well, I do, but I was actually asking a PGA Tour rules official on Friday when Luke Clanton, Justin Thomas, and Nick Dunlap were all put on the clock on the 17th hole, which I was like, okay, this is pretty late in the round to be put on the clock as they only have one hole to get into position. It just seemed silly to me. But I was asking him, I was like, hey, it seems like JT's away. When do you start the clock? He's like, well, it's kind of just like a feel thing. And I'm like, huh, well, that didn't help, right? Like, they basically say that they give the player, you know, the time to where it's like, okay, they officially have started their routine. So that first person really can be put in some very different positions based off of who's timing. Like, that person that's a rules official, if they think, okay, this is when this person's routine has started, well, that's completely different than the second and third guy, as they've already gotten all of their information and they're genuinely should be ready to play and they should just be going through their routine. So I think it's a little tough. Like, if you're a shorter hitter, like, you could be put in a tougher spot to play quicker. I don't know. It's not a perfect science. And I think we've kind of talked a little bit about that. The PGA Tour wants to cut down on cards for many reasons, but one of the reasons is to get the players around the course faster, which I think all fans really like. You really only feel it on the West Coast when it feels like the group just is just crawling out there. But as we get into the year, I think the aim point is definitely something I'm not for. I think it's just clunky to watch as a fan. It's just like, why is this person standing on the hole? So there's plenty of things that you could cut down on, but listen, man, guys' careers have changed with aim point. Keegan Bradley, Max Homa, are incredible aim point putters that if you take away that art that they've a skill, I wouldn't maybe call it as much of an art as I would a learned skill that they've inherited, that they've practiced every single day, and you take that away, it's like, all right, well, shoot. I mean, how do you police that? Like, what do you deem is aim point and what isn't? Like, putting your hands up in the air, can you still go feel it with your feet? I don't know.
Well, I mean, I think all that stuff to me is it's hard to ban something as subjective as, like, you can't do aim point. Like, we all know it as aim point because, you know, it's been branded as such, and it's, you know, we see it, and there's a whole system behind it. But I mean, you know, what does that make regular green reading? You know, what system is that? You know, what's type of system is it? A guy who lays down on the ground? It's like they're all sort of, it's nebulous to say you can't do this one type of green reading. To me, it's, I think it all comes down to what can you actually objectively define as to what you can or can't do. Mm-hmm. And a number of seconds connected to a shot is objective. It's like you either, you know, do anything you want to. You can do aim point. You can, you know, stare up at the sky, but just do it in 60 seconds or 40 seconds or whatever. And if you don't, we're adding another shot into your score. And I think guys pretty quickly will figure out if they can't do aim point in that a lot of time, then they're going to have to find a different way to read putts, you know?
Yeah. And so, and part of me too, I think there's times and places where you're okay. Like, I was so fine with Luke Clanton taking his sweet time on 18. Like, everybody's like, man, he played slow. And I was like, I don't care. Like, it was such a big moment. PGA Tour card on the line. Felt like he was stalking the putt like Tiger Woods used to. Like, so there's times and places where, hey, I'm fine with a player taking more time because it just builds up the suspense and amplifies the moment.
You know, and that's, I think, the hard part about it is because this all is connected back to, like, this nebulous product discussion. You know, and it's like we want it to move fast when it's dragging and we need it to move fast. And there are guys that are in groups that are have no relevance on the outcome of the tournament that are taking their sweet time, you know, and they're holding up groups behind them. And now all of a sudden it's like, you know, this is now we have these, we're outside the TV window. Dottie Pepper's furious. You know, everyone's up in arms about the slow play thing. But there are moments where it you know, like you're talking about Luke Clanton, where it lends itself to the cinematic. It's like, yeah. Do you really want to hit Luke Clanton? Imagine if he makes a birdie putt and it's like, oh, by the way, you did that outside 60 seconds. So you actually did not get your tour card because
he's not even a PGA Tour member. I don't even know if they can find him. I don't even know how that works.
That's another good question. But I do think that it's like, the unfortunate thing is you probably have to be, if you want to do something about it and change it, you probably have to be pretty consistent across the board, because if you're not, then people are going to complain. The people who get penalized say, well, wait a second, that guy just took, you know, a minute and a half and you just like him more. Mm-hmm. He was in a high leverage moment. So why is that? So I think that's why I see the PGA Tour as being hesitant to really do anything significant about this for all the reasons you just stated. Although I do think, you know, the LPGA problem has been worse in the past. And it also, it's interesting when the face of your game in a lot of ways, Nelly Korda, is a very fast player, and you hear her talk about it a lot of like, this is just brutal sometimes. And when this memo went out, she was like, finally, this is going to make things a lot better. So maybe there's more of an
impetus there. Yeah, it's good. I can't wait to see how it's policed on the LPGA. Maybe we'll get to some type of format, the PGA Tour. That would be the goal. It's something that all the players agree is fair. I don't really know exactly from a second standpoint. I don't know. I haven't looked at the data and the analytics behind what normal is for guys, what they're allotted, nor do I pay attention. I know what's slow and what's fast.
Yeah.
And I know which players are and which players aren't.
Well, that's the funny thing about it too, is like even the guy you talked about there, it's like, it's kind of a feel thing. It's like, it's all kind of a feel thing, isn't it? Yeah. You know, a lot of what we do is a feel thing. So just want to kind of ping you with some live stuff on the way out.
Yeah, it's perfect. Great Adrian way to Maronk, finish the show here.
Adrian Maronk wins the season opener under the lights. There were some reports.
What did he shoot? Was he what? Like, it seemed like the golf course was easy.
Let me pull up the leaderboard right here because I
haven't looked at the full leaderboard. It's my first look at it.
10 under in the first round, 6 under in the second round, and just a 1 under in the third round to finish at 17 under, which is two shots ahead of both John Rahm, who was 5 under, 5 under, 5 under, 15 under for the week, and Sebastian Munoz. I'm trouble with that word for some reason. 8 under, 6 under, 1 under to finish at 15 under for the week as well. So Adrian Meronk is your winner. And then I believe that Legion 13 or Legion...
They won by like a million, right?
They won...
Caleb Straw finished 11th. Hatton finished 6th.
That's right.
Rahm finished 2nd.
How about this?
They're counting like all the scores this year too.
Yeah, our guy Sean Lowry, back in the mix, sending us all the stats from this week. So here's some fun notes from him. His freeloader award is now gone for 2025, now that all four scores count. That's news to me. John Rahm has now crested the $40 million mark in career earnings in LIV Golf. That would put him 26th all-time on the PGA Tour. Adrian Meronk, the 20th different winner in LIV history. This is kind of mind-blowing. LIV Golf has made 70 millionaires since this thing started. 70. 35 players have made more than 10 million since LIV started. And then a couple quick ones to just take us out. Ollie Snyderjans finished T30 this week in his debut, 6 under. And Anthony Kim watch continues, T49, even par. So that's the wrap from the actual on the golf playing. Mm-hmm. There were some reports about the first round TV ratings on Fox Sports 2. Broadcast averaged about 12,000 viewers from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. per Nielsen. Colt Nost, while broadcasting the WM Phoenix Open on the 16th hole, said around 24,000 circled around the Coliseum here. That's 12,000 times 2, if my math is right. So Colt was
that's a good one.
Subtle digs here. Now, I'll
say
this too.
That is shockingly low.
James Colgan of Golf.com notes, and this is a fair note in the TV broadcasting world, 12,000 is pretty normal for a Fox Sports 2 broadcast. Like, there are not a ton of people that have cable packages that have Fox Sports 2. It's not like an equivalent to ESPN2 type situation. I mean, this is
but
like
here's a quick thing. Here's a thought. If you want to start out your LIV season with a splash, let's just not be dumb. Like, let's put this thing on Fox or FS1. Like, it's just such a stupid decision. If you want to start your season off on FS2, it's your own dang fault, man. Like, it's just so simple and such an easy business decision to start the year on your best network. Like, it just seems so silly to me that they're like, all right, yeah, we're fine with FS2. It would be similar to TGL starting on ESPNU.
That is the exact comparison that I was going to make. I think you nail on the head there, which is just to say that there have to be people in that room. And I don't know what the programming conflict was. I don't know what they had on Fox Sports 1, if it was completely immovable. Obviously, Fox is doing a lot this week in the lead up to the Super Bowl. But, I just say this, like, if that's the case, there has to be someone in this room who knows that you've got the first round on Fox Sports 2. It's going to get a Nielsen rating. That Nielsen rating is going to get reported and picked up by golf media types, and everyone's going to talk about that. So are we okay with that, and are we prepared to deal with the fallout, or is that such a bad look that we need to do something different in terms of when we're programming it, et cetera, et cetera? So the TGL comp is exactly correct. It's like the TGL in the latter half of the season is going to move to ESPN2.
And the ratings are going to...
The ratings will decline. Yeah, you know, they're not taking lead-ins from Duke or UNC basketball, things like that, or you know, carrying into it. So I'd say it this way: it's like TGL knew that from the jump. They put it on flagship ESPN. They got the same discussion we're having now. We had in a positive light, and we talked about, oh wow, there were a million uniques week one. You know, there were 1.3 million or whatever it was. There were 4 million uniques for Tiger's first match. You know, or 1.3 million average viewers. Like, that's the type of conversation you want to have when you have a league that's appearing in a new place with a new broadcaster, not the one we're having now. So whether that was a calculated decision within the confines of LIV, and they said we're okay with it either way, and it's going to get better over the season, I'm not sure. Just feels like an avoidable black eye.
Yes. Well, I think you actually bring up a good point talking about how it's Super Bowl week. So maybe they had a little bit of the decision with Fox already having programming set up on FS1 or regular Fox that week. But still, not exactly the start you were looking for on the network. It's going to definitely change as the year goes on.
Sure.
We know that. Like, they're going to get some good ratings just being on a different channel. But CW was very, you know, like, that was a, it's on everybody's home. So, like, everybody's got the CW.
Everyone's got the dub, man. I watched a lot of North Carolina football there last year. Won't have to this year, though. Thank you, Bill Belichick. On the good news front from Liv, within this past week, both the USGA and the RNA have created some exemptions, some pathways into the U.S. Open and the Open Championship, respectively.
Yeah, read them out to me.
Yeah, so here's what we got. So the USGA led first, and they're creating two exemptions starting in for the 2026 U.S. Open. So the one is
two exemptions.
Let me just read them to you. I guess It could be the same player, but basically here's how they've classified it. The first one they're going to give is it will basically wrap at the conclusion of this 2025 season. So it's the top non-exempt player from the top three of the 2025 standings, right?
From
so it's
the
like,
top three. So that is as far as they'll stretch it.
So top three, if anyone in that top three is not exempt, they get into the 2026 U.S. Open at the conclusion of the 25 season. Then, as we're leading into the 2026 Open, whoever is the top player in that 2026 live standings that next spring or whatever the cutoff is, that player also gets an invite into the U.S. Open if they're not already exempt.
Okay.
But to your point, like if all three guys are already exempt,
that's not like a big number.
It really isn't. Now I think it's in a way it's a nod to just like we will take your elite players, but we ain't gonna like hand out 10 exemptions to guys who are just playing on a free money tour. So then the RNA, this just happened actually today. They are adding qualification pathway. So the leading, and this applies to the 2025 Open Championship. So the leading live player not already exempt from the top five in the individual season standings through the live event in Texas that I think wraps on June 29th earns a spot in Royal Portrush this year.
All right.
This year, that's Open Championship. And for U.S. Open, it's 26 and it's top three, not already exempt, into this season.
So the U.S. Open could
player.
Sneak two guys in potentially, but most likely it'll probably be one. Because you imagine John Rahm will probably be up in the top three of the standings. And
I bet most of those guys are already exempt, I think. I'd have to go look at it.
It would be Rahm, Hatton, Bryson.
Yeah.
I'm not sure how long DJ's exemptions are going to go for.
It's true.
His are going to be coming up at some point.
Yeah. So that really just – all that leaves is – PGA of America and Augusta National have not yet created live golf exemptions. Although I saw some reports that I guess maybe Joaquin Neiman and Sergio Garcia have both said that they've been given an exemption into the PGA Championship, but that the PGA of America has not announced that officially.
Okay.
Fact check me on that if anyone's listening. But I read that somewhere and I was wondering if the PGA of America will fall suit soon. I mean, I'm curious to hear your take on this. I mean, this feels fair. I think that it's been a big complaint of Liv. You know, we can't earn.
I'm fine with it.
Yeah.
They didn't start too big as far as too many exemptions. They kind of started here like, all right, let's if this is too little over time, we can always adjust. You don't want to start too many exemptions. You have to work your way back. Always easier to start this way. And then if Liv hangs around for a long time, then you can kind of work off of that.
Yeah. So there you have it. That's our Liv. That's talking Liv.
Yeah.
On the Smiley Show. What else you got, man? You got any final thoughts? We did a lot of golf talk today. We're like an hour and 30.
Yeah, good show. Good show. I think
shiny new graphics, shiny new videos.
There you go. Final thought would be that the WM Phoenix Open, I think that was probably like our best form of what the PGA Tour, maybe not quite as much the fan, like how what they're known for is being just like a drunk rowdy crowd. So let's just talk about the number of people, maybe not quite their BACs in when it comes to the big crowd, but it's a recognizable venue, a really, I think, a fun venue to watch on TV. Risk reward, you know, it's an incredible finish, lots of people, good noise, good energy. But then also it's the full field for me. It's just the fact that we had different storylines going on. And I think if this was a signature event with only 70 guys, it just doesn't come across the same for me. Like, I liked having a full field at this event. 132, I mean, it doesn't, if it's 120, if it's 100 guys, I think the signature events model is going to get tiring at some point. Mm-hmm. I think 120 is the right number. Even 100, I'd be fine with. Still, it just had all the feels for me this week. It was a really good PGA Tour event. And just two really good weeks in a row, talking about Pebble and the WM Phoenix Open. You had Rory McIlroy winning at that one, a great leaderboard. It would have been nice for that one to be closer to 100 guys. But with that being said, you know, they're on a good run right now. I'm interested to see what the ratings say. But I think a lot of people really liked watching the broadcast this week.
Yeah, I agree. I think, you know, we covered a lot of what you talked about just in terms of like a desire for matching a streamlined version of the product with like something that resembles full competition, full fields, cuts, things like that. I'm quite interested to see what Genesis and Torrey is like this week. So
yeah,
it should be fun.
Well, we're gonna be doing some one and dones. Hopefully, we need help. We need help from above.
I'll leave figuring out that out. You're 81st in the FedEx Cup standings, and I'm now 67th. Thank you,
yeah,
Sepp
good week
Straka.
For Sepp. I should have drew a name out of the hat. I should have just taken JT like I wanted to, but now I guess I get to save him for another week. So
that's true. That's true. Yeah. Well, we're gonna try to get that right. What's man? Yeah. Binds. We appreciate y'all watching and listening. I think we're excited about the guest, maybe multiple guests in the feed this week.
We'll see. Need to send some texts.
You're getting the behind the curtain production process for the Smiley Show. It wouldn't change it for a thing. So, look forward to that on Wednesday. And then, of course, the Genesis at Torrey Pines this week. And then we'll be back here on the YouTube channel on X recapping that tournament. So appreciate y'all watching and listening as always. Hope you have a great one. Talk to you back here very soon. I'm going to hit the outro.
Do it.